Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 5, delivered on January 31, 2018. The title of this lecture is Analysis of Financial Statements.
Today, Analysis of Financial Statements. I begin with just some more screens, relatively briefly going through and making sure that you are becoming comfortable with screens for stocks. So what I'll do here is we'll just use finance.yahoo.com, cheapo site. Now, the first thing I want you to look at here, before I go to a specific company, these are the broad market indices, as we would properly call them. The Standard & Poor's 500, the Dow 30, the NASDAQ, the Russell, and then they got crude here too, 64.77. That's probably Brent. I don't know what it is. But anyway, first things first, the Standard & Poor's 500 index is the Standard & Poor's 500 is 500 of the largest corporations in the world. Taken together, if I'm not mistaken, they constitute about 70% of the market cap of the world in those 500 companies. And so when you look at that index, whether it goes up or down, you are seeing the day's assessment of about 70% of the world's value. Kinda. And as you can see, well, let me expand this a little bit. It was up a tiny bit. That's almost some trivial, meaningless, that rise in the Standard & Poor's 500. The Dow 30 represents 30 huge corporations. It used to be called the Dow Industrials, but in the last 20, 30 years, a lot of the big industrials in this index of 30 companies have been replaced with large, like, high-tech companies, entertainment companies, because of the shift in the world economy, and especially in the U.S. economy. The Dow 30 would be a very narrow index of the biggest and how they did today. The NASDAQ is small companies, small cap, as we call them, small capitalization. Although there are a few monster companies like Microsoft, if I'm not mistaken, is still in the NASDAQ. It overall represents how the market assessed the prospects of the huge number of small companies. Now, there are hundreds of thousands, I would suppose, in the NASDAQ anymore. When I was in the business, this was where I worked, was in the NASDAQ. I got trading symbols for little public companies in the NASDAQ. Only once did I show up in another trading place called the AMEX, the American Stock Exchange. And then you got the Russell 2000, small companies. That's an unweighted index, by the way. The other ones are weighted by the size of the company in them. But the Russell is just small companies and all that. And as you can see, none of them really did anything spectacular today, although the Russell did seem to take a whipping a little more. But if you look at the spark charts, that's what these little things are called, spark charts. You can do these in Excel, and I will show you later in the course how to do these. They're kind of nice to have in reports, the little spark charts, to just give you an idea of what the data is telling. If you'll see it, overall, through the day, the market kind of bounced. All of these were just kind of flopping around, and then nearer the end of the day, it looks like the bears had some fun. And then there was a rally at the end, probably bargain hunters scooping up some of the stocks that had been swapped downward, beaten downward. Just a little rally. Now, the Russell had a bad day overall. You can see that there was a rally at the end of this one. But in almost all of these, it looks like at the very end, there was not very, the bears were beginning to take their bite again. So what does that mean about tomorrow? Not much you can say, although by the end of today, things weren't very pretty. Now, let's look at a screen. And I'll do McDonald's. Whoops. Mickey D. Yeah, its symbol is MCD. Okay, wow. McDonald's. Okay, this is today. It was not a, it was a down day. It was a spanking day. Okay, now. So it closed at 171.14, down from its settle yesterday. The settle was 172.48. Now, let's do something here. If I wanted to buy a share of McDonald's, madam, what would I pay for it?
It would be the bid.
No.
Yes,
you were on the right track. At least you were looking at the right place. You would pay about $171.48 a share. Now, if you wanted to sell it, you would sell it at $170.90. So that gives you an idea that the price you see really isn't what you're going to get exactly, because if you're buying, you're going to buy a little at a little higher price, and if you're selling, you're going to sell at a little lower price. And that's just how the markets work. Now, as far as this bid-ask spread goes, and this is kind of a soft place here. Madam, just gut, is that a wide bid-ask spread or a narrow bid-ask spread?
Wide.
Kind of wide, although, you know, it's nothing out of line. I mean, if you see something in a couple of dollars, that's really wide. This one's a little bit, I don't know. It is a little wide, I guess. About 58 cents spread between what you would buy it at and what you would sell it at, you know. But that you got to remember that when you're buying and selling stocks, it's the bid ask. It's not what the price up there at the top is telling you. You got to look at the bid and the ask and see which one you're doing, buying or selling. Okay, now let's try something here, sir. What's the OBV? What's the OBV? This is what I like. See, I'm going to just keep doing this over and over because at first it doesn't sink in. And that's just normal and I expect it. It takes me a it takes you a while. Too late, you're fired. Okay, sir, what's the OBV? Don't have it? Okay, madam? Don't ask me, I'm in another major. What's your major?
Marketing.
Yeah, okay. I didn't mean, they yell at me for saying things. I mean, they do. I used to teach marketing. I like to teach that, but, you know. Okay, sir, what's the OBV?
I have no idea.
Madam, what's the OBV? You don't see it up there. It's right there. OBV means on balance volume. Remember? Because that's what the limit order books had on them. But there is also trading in the dark markets, too, that we don't see. So the on-balance volume is about 7 million shares. Okay? McDonald's, sir. Is McDonald's a safe, relatively safe, or relatively risky stock?
Safe.
Why? I don't know. I just guessed. No. No. There's a number that tells you, madam. Redeem yourself. Yes. Look at the number. Look at the number. What the hell are you talking about, boy? Madam, do you see it? She's right. It's relatively safe. A little safe. But why? What number is telling you that? You don't see it? Okay. Beta. Beta of 1.00 means that this stock in a well-diversified portfolio would have the volatility of the market itself. A beta below 1 means that in a well-diversified portfolio, this stock has less volatility than the market itself. Now, in this case, with that point, is that a 0.89? Yeah. 0.89, that's telling me that it has, in a well-diversified portfolio, this stock would have 89% of the market's volatility. And therefore, we would expect it to have about 89% of the return to the market itself. It's safer than the market, and so it has a lower expected return. So this would be more of a, what we call, defensive stock. This would be more, it's not hugely, I mean, it's not a beta of like 0.2, but it's somewhat defensive, as opposed to stocks that are aggressive, stocks with betas above 1. We would call those more aggressive stocks. But in this case, McDonald's, and that shouldn't surprise you. McDonald's is a huge corporation. It's not going to die. It is stable from year to year to year. If one McDonald's burns to the ground, who cares? There are a zillion other ones out there. Even if they had some major, well, I can't say that. But this is a company that it's not going to be beaten back and forth too much. Although today the stock was spanked around by the market somewhat. It went down, the market, it went down a little bit. But again, as I had told you before, numbers on their own mean nothing. All that matters is percentage changes. And in this case, if we go back up and look at this guy, we would see that it lost maybe a quarter of a percent, a little more than a quarter of a percent. That's nothing hard. That's not much at all. So, but what would really matter? But notice here, do you see that there was a sell-off early in the day? Do you see that sell-off? The bears just came in and hammered this stock. And then there were a few rallies through the day, and then there was just more of this beating it down. By the end of the day, there was an attempt at a rally. But again, like the other stocks, like those indexes, you saw that at the very end of the day, there was one last little sell-off. Now, will that continue tomorrow? I can't tell you that. I might expect that the market will open lower than it closed, but I don't know that. Now, a couple of other things just to bring up. The market cap, of course. This is a $136 billion corporation. The price per share times the number of shares outstanding, this represents the market's valuation of the total equity in the corporation. They're paying about a 2.25% dividend. So in other words, if you paid $171.14, you would qualify for a dividend that would be like putting your money, $171, in the bank and getting a 2.27% return on your money. Okay? That's what that tells me. I mean, that's not guaranteed, but most corporations do everything they can to keep paying a dividend. So this is sort of like, now obviously this is better than a savings account. Savings accounts are paying so little now. But of course, it's riskier than a savings account. So there's that risk-return relationship. Now, the one-year estimate target estimate on this is 187.88. Now, that was where I left off yesterday, and if I could find a marker, I will do a one-year calculation on return. Now, in this case, remember that formula I gave you. The percent change, percent delta, is always going to be the end value minus the beginning value, all of that over the beginning value. That is percent change. And it's the percent change that we care about. Now, we have here an estimate of the price exactly 1 year out. Now, that makes it easy for us to do an annual expected return. Now, this is not the return. This is an expected return. And in this case, we would have, we expect in 1 year the stock price to be $187.68. Minus what it closed at today, if 1 year, $171.14, so we got $187.68 minus $171.14, all divided by the $171.14. And so we can get a percent return. Pulling up a calculator here to do this. Okay, so I would have 187.68. Well, clear that, sorry. Open parentheses. 187.68 minus 171.14, close the parentheses, divided by 171.14. What did I do? You know what? I can't use the keyboard, which is much more better because this keyboard is weirded out for some 187.68 minus 171.14 watching myself this time. Okay, there's the dollar expected return, $16.54. Now we divide that by the initial investment, $171.14. That's a 9.66% expected return, annual return, over 1 year, exactly 1 year holding period. Not spectacular, but it's sure better than putting your money in a savings account. But, of course, there's more risk in this. Now, we would expect that a market portfolio would be have a somewhat higher return than this. Because, remember, this one is lower risk than the market. So, we in a well-diversified portfolio, McDonald's, we would expect it to contribute a 9.66% return over the next year. If you bought it at 171.14. Now, is that what you're going to get? Probably not. This is an expectation. And in your world, in your work, you will probably end up doing forecasting, or you will be part of groups and teams that do forecasting. You're going to be wrong. And that's just the whole point of expectation. It's not what actually will happen. However, the defense we use is that we follow best practices. And so if anyone wants to criticize us that, well, your projections came out a little wrong, well, excuse me. I followed the best practices. I didn't use feelings and gut. I used what is the standards of the industry to do this. And that's why you can take this number as your best estimate for the expected return on this stock. And again, it's not going to be the right number. You're going to see me do projections in this class. Sometimes I'm going to hit them right on the head, and sometimes I'm going to be off. And if you criticize me for it, I'm just going to say KMA. Kiss my aspirations and all that. Okay, now, put that one down. Let's take another one here. Let's take a company that is in bad shape. Sears, let me write it Sears, okay, S-H-L-D. Now, let me go back here. I want to show you something. Is this one day chart somehow showing you how McDonald's sucks or something like that? No. Let's look at the 5-year. Madam, what do you see?
Green.
Green. Yes, green. I thought you said three. Where the hell are these? Green, yes. And what? A little more detail. A little more detail. That's good. You can tell colors.
Not colorblind. Everything is going up.
Yes. This stock has been going up over the past 5 years. Like almost all stocks have been going up. We are in a bull market. The market as a whole has momentum. It is going up, and it will keep going up for a while. So anything that says, well, it's something about now that's great, that's still... No, this is part of a larger market that has been rising for... Okay, 2008, September 15th, we were about 2 hours away from a financial apocalypse of the world. Literally, it could have been the end of everything that you know. And fortunately, we avoided it, but the market was just slaughtered. And people lost a lot of money in that market, huge amounts. We spent almost $1 trillion to boost the economy, to feed the pathetic big banks that had screwed up so much, and then we managed to crawl out of it. And we have been having a roaring market ever since then. Okay? So this is nothing about some special thing that's happening right now. This is the momentum of a bull market. And bull markets are great for everyone. The problem is that, sir, what happens to cows?
They get slaughtered.
Or they get abducted by aliens. You know, either way, the cow has a bad ending. Either you go to the slaughterhouse and they turn you into beef, or you get sucked up into an alien spacecraft and you get taken to this place called Cow Planet, where you are united with your cow brethren that were populated on Earth about 2,300 years ago, and then they began to be the slaves of the humans, and they were turned into steaks, so that's why you go to the slaughterhouse. So you were taken to Cow Planet where you can play and live, indeed, a happy cow life. Where the hell was I? Okay. Okay. Bottom line here is that the problem with a bull market is that it ends. And one of the problems along the way is that we have these people who think they're geniuses. Because my boat rose. Well, that was because the tide came in, Sparky. And then these geniuses strut around thinking that they can do anything, and then the market turns south, and they end up getting creamed in that downstroke because they don't do prudent investment strategies. They panic. It's like the people who play these first-person shooter games. They have no idea what it's like when you actually go out there. And during a bad situation, sure enough, a rout will happen. That means that you and your buddies all panic and you do the wrong things. At the bottom of the market, as the market was crashing, it had already crashed, and all of these amateurs sold. They were scared and they sold. They ran, just like untrained soldiers. And of course, then they bought back in after the rally had already taken off. And so they actually lost a lot of money. Even to this day, some of them haven't recovered. The professionals, they just held on. They rode that dog down, and they rode the bull back up. And they are multiples ahead because they didn't panic in the bear market. We will have a bear market. Probably within the next year, it will turn pretty sour. But it's going to have this momentum for a while longer. And so don't think you're a genius because you have bought stocks and made some money. Because in the long run, I'll see you on the skid row where I'll be when I finish teaching and collect retirement. Okay, now let me go forward here. Sears. Sears is a basket case. In a case like this, one thing that I want to point out here is that numbers almost don't mean anything in a company like this. The standards that we use just, look, see this price earnings ratio? The reason it's an NA is because the company's got a negative income. So you can't, it doesn't mean anything to divide the price by the earnings in a company like this. Earnings per share. Every shareholder, each of his or her shares lost almost $11 in the last year. That's a lot of money to lose. I mean, this is south. And the price, $2.57. That's a bargain, but what kind of a bargain is that? Yeah, they're showing us a picture of Sears here. Get off that. Okay. See, I mean, this stock is just a basket case from beginning to end. So the numbers almost no longer have too much meaning. Whoever the analyst was that projected says it's going to lose 7 cents over the next year. Is that going to be the case? I don't know. I mean, they're making panic moves. But at the same time, they reported some earnings strength. But the big problem is, how long can they last? Here's another one that's a basket case. JCPenney. JCP. And I'm just exposing you to this because I'm going to have the expectation that you will be able to talk to me and then go out and see these things a lot better than normal people do. Yeah, JCPenney, again, another slaughterhouse. God, I hate those pop-ups. Okay, again, losing money. That beta just doesn't mean anything. I mean, a company, that's where the accounting numbers begin to just kind of no longer represent because you no longer have that concept of a going concern. That is so pivotal to everything they teach you in accounting. And in this case, the going concern assumption is shaking down and falling apart. Although, there's a projection that it will be a little higher in a year. Truth be told, both Sears and Penney's I would have written off a year ago. I'm not sure I'm ready to write them off now. They're certainly not buys, but I've gone back from a sell to a hold on them. Now for a heavy GE. GE had a good day. Wait, what? Oh. Yeah, GE had a good day. Stronger day than the market. Notice the beta. But it's still losing money. God, I hate these animated ads. Get off. That's weird, man. It's a chicken thing. Okay, notice that it's losing money, but it's still a relatively safe stock. GE has had some bad press lately. And do you see the bid ask is fairly tight on that? The spread is fairly tight. You see that? Only a 7 cents, four cent spread. And the projection is from 1617 to 19, I'm almost curious, 1986, 1617. Open parentheses, 1986 minus 16. And I'm doing this on purpose to get you used to seeing this. Divided by, what was it, 1617? This should be a pretty decent number. Oh! I mean, the projection is a 22.82% annual return. You buy today, this stock would earn you per share, you would earn about 22.82. That's the expectation. So that's a pretty darn strong. You know, I don't, is that what's going to happen? You can't say that. There's no certainty in this at all. But at the same time, there you go. That's not a bad look. Now, just taking this on its face, again, GE over a 5-year period has had a lot of ups and downs. It is essentially, it has been considered for the last year and a half or so, a bad stock by the big dogs, and they've been selling it off. In a case like this, I generally recommend you don't buck a market. You do not play against the big dogs because they'll eat you alive. But in a case like this, I would almost be interested in saying, it might be worth a try on this one. It has to be in a well-diversified portfolio. You don't go in naked on a given stock. You put it in a portfolio. Still, though, that volume. Look at that volume on that thing. Do you see that volume? OBV, 78 million shares, and that doesn't even count what's going on behind the curtains. Okay, now let's go to something a little more. I'm going to use this one for the basis of the lecture here. Target. Or Target, excuse me. Seriously? There you go. Notice how Target rode the market fairly normally. The bulls came in, and then the bears smacked them around. The bulls and the bears pushed back and forth against each other, and then the bears just came in and slapped them around. And then the bulls sort of, and at the end, they kind of grabbed up the bargains and bought back in. Although you see that notch there at the end again. You see that? That's a little bit interesting to me that I've seen that notch over and over again. That tells me that at the end of the day, the market, the bears were pretty much the ones at the end of the day. And I keep seeing that knot. Say that again. 5 years. Say it.
5 years. Now.
Oh, 5 years. But that's still that notch there. But let me go back to the 1 day. I wonder if it's there on the 1 day. Yep. The notch is there. That's a concern to me. Now, if I were a technical analyst, which I'm not, By the way, we call the technical analysts elves. If I were an elf, I would say that that's a rumbling of something that's dark. If I see that notch, stock after stock after stock, that's a concern of mine. But that's just me being an old crusty bastard. Target. Safe or relatively risky?
Safe.
Yes, actually quite safe. Target is a strong company. See that beta of 0.32? That tells me that this is for one thing, Target is such a strong company. They were heavily criticized a few years ago when they spent just boatloads of money to rehab all of their stores. I mean, they spent a huge amount. Yeah, do you remember when that happened? Now they have those little grocery stores in them and all that kind of stuff. And the reason that they had done that was you are their target market. You college students, somewhat more educated in college or in professional training of some kind. What they were trying to do was they want to keep the college student crowd, but they also want to start riding a cohort wave. So in other words, when you get out of college, they want to keep you coming to their stores. So they want to keep having the college students come in. But when you leave college, you will still be going back there. So they upscale so that after college, you can go there for your shopping. So it's an interesting strategy. It costs a lot of money. They were criticized heavily for it. But as you can see, the market considers them to be a very safe company. They're not going to die. They're not going to go away anytime soon. Dividend, okay. Let me go, that's Target. I want to go back here. I want to show you something anomalous about GE. Bear with me. General Electric. General Electric lost money. You see that? Earnings per share is negative. They're paying a dividend. A 48-cent per share dividend. Almost 3%. Why would a company that's losing money still be paying a stupid dividend? Why? Is there any logic to that? I mean, You had a bad year, you lost money, and you're still giving money away to your nephews and nieces. Why would you do that? You got any idea about it? Why would you do that? Yahtzee. You see, dividends don't make sense on a technical level. Because to pay a dividend, first you have to pay taxes on the net income. You send it to the shareholders and they have to pay tax at ordinary income rate on the dividend. That just doesn't make sense. Why don't they just plow all the money of a corporation back into the corporation to create capital gains, which are taxed at a lower rate for their shareholders? It's because the dividend is a signal. Signaling theory is now very much recognized in corporate as well as in social markets. Signaling theory tells us that sometimes it's giving money, even when you don't have that money, that matters to the market. Can you sustain your dignity in a bad situation? Can you continue to contribute to charities, for example, if your income has gone down? Things like that. Years ago, when I was in consulting, I consulted for a very well-heeled company. It was an alphabet house, and I was invited to their annual Christmas dinner. It was a lavish affair for the top executives, maybe like 70, 80 people there. And I mean, they had all this food laid out. They had these just rows of these little lamb chops. I was putting them in my pockets and things like that, and the pate was to die for. And after a while, there was this ching, 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 and the CEO goes to the front. And he's got this big grin, smiling grin on his face. And he says, "We had a wonderful year." I knew that wasn't exactly the case. 3 years later, they were bought out. And he and his cronies were moved away. But there he was, standing there. It was an incredible year, and this feast is for you to show you how confident we are in the future. And then that guy, that CEO, he takes out a big cigar, and he lights it with a $100 bill. And he pulls it, and he says, "Oh yes, it was a very good year." And then he throws this $100 bill in his ashtray. I'm like, he was signaling. It wasn't the case, but he wanted to create a sense of confidence. GE is giving that dividend. Don't worry about this negative. We're going to be okay. Truth be told, probably they will. They're not going to die. But it's a signal to the shareholders. Times get bad. Times get good. We maintain a stability. It's that thing about when everyone around you is going crazy and you hold control of yourself. As a matter of fact, years ago, there was a wonderful movie by a famous Japanese director named Kurosawa. It was called Kagemusha, The Shadow Warrior. It showed about the importance of having that calmness at the leadership level, not losing your cool in the worst combat situations, which is what often happens when a military is routed. They've lost their discipline, they didn't have discipline, and they all run scattered and they are killed in their tracks. Let that be a lesson to you. First-person shooter games really don't teach you what you need to know, but there you go. Okay, now let me go back to Target here. Target, okay. We've got a nice, strong company here. Not a lot to worry about. P.E. ratio, 16.76. You interpret that for every dollar that belongs to the shareholders at the bottom line this period, the market has determined that that dollar will earn almost 16 more dollars that will belong to the shareholders in the future. That's the best way to interpret that. Volume, OBV, was 8.705 on millions. I'm going to go back to the one-day. That is the one-day chart. Quiet chart. fairly quiet. This is a relative, this is actually a quite safe stock, but it is safe only in a well-diversified portfolio. You buy this stock naked, you're going to have extreme volatility, and you will not get rewarded for anything but the part of that that would have been there in a well-diversified portfolio. I'm going to keep saying this and then get more technical and formal about it as the semester goes along. You don't get rewarded for volatility. You get rewarded only, you should expect a reward only for the volatility that you cannot remove by diversifying your portfolio. Anyway, now, I'm going to take you over here to the darkness, this SEC.gov. What do you mean? Under filings, company filing search. The first thing I'll point out is, and I told you about this last time, when a company files, companies must file quarterly, annual, and other documents with the SEC. If they lie, will they get a little spanking. The chief executive officers and the board of directors could go to prison. Ever since Sarbanes-Oxley was passed, the officers and directors have had to personally sign these documents, assuring that they are truthful. I will caution you. First of all, this is original source material, which is outstanding for research papers and term papers. It is not any of these idiotic sites. Even the analysts, when they analyze, they're going to these documents to do it. I must caution you, though, that there is a certain small group of companies that are allowed to lie. The SEC, the Treasury Department, the Department of Justice, the Federal Reserve, is allowing a small group of companies to lie. They've been allowed to do this for almost a decade now. And I will explain that to you later. But for any normal company, especially any normal company that is not one of the large banks, these are quite truthful documents. And I'm going to type in TGT. And you will see 8K, 10Q, these documents. If you are in a corporation that is a public corporation, every cycle you could very well be part of the hustle and flow of getting these documents together to submit to the SEC. Accountants and lawyers will be the ones who do it. Back in my time, they didn't require that you had those credentials, and I did them. But now it's all done at the final stage. But all of the information is gathered together by committees and of the company and all of that. You could very well be in that process. I almost guarantee that you'll be in some kind of an important process, like the budgeting process, the public filings process. You will be part of that hustle and flow that is the ordinary cycle of life of a corporation. Now, the Qs are quarterly statements. I'm going to see if I can find the last K. I think it's been a while. There it is. Now, the first thing I want to show you is the document. This is what we file. I used to do this. Now, notice how long this document is. It goes on and on and on and on and on. My God. Truth be told, I'm glad I don't do this anymore. This was way too much like work. Do you see that? That is every quarter, every year, a Q every quarter, a K every year, you have to do this. But it's original source. And if you want to find out the truth, Not some analyst little twist on it or some weird person on Wikistupedia or Investostupedia. You go here and use your own mind. And then find some analysts who will help you interpret. Or come to me and I'll say, go away. Now, let me show you one really important place in here. Especially if you're doing research papers for, I know management classes do it, marketing classes do it. It's the MD&A, item 7, Management Discussion and Analysis of Financial Condition and Results of Operations. We call it the MD&A. This is an internal assessment of what happened, why it happened, what's going to go on next in the best estimates of the company. The MD&A is, when this has always been the case, you read this, they are glib. In other words, they're quite honest. Okay, we really didn't do a good job here, and this is why. They will talk about the competitive environment. They will talk about lawsuits outstanding. They will talk about their best assessment of what's going to happen with litigation, with competition, with macroeconomic conditions, industry conditions. It is just a resource written by the company's people themselves in their best and honest voice. Because those people on Wall Street who buy and sell this stock, you lie to them. And it is even worse than if you lie to the DOJ. Because those Wall Street boys will paddle you hard. Now it goes through a lot of charts and numbers and says, now let's explain. It actually explains to you in the MD&A. Okay, this is what happened. It'll give you these charts. You can even copy and paste these charts into your term papers and just make sure you do a proper citation. But look how it's exhaustive. Oh, here it is, item 8. Look at that. The signature of the chairman, the signature of the executive vice president. In other words, the top dog signed this. So if the SEC and the Department of Justice or a state regulator catches a lie, these people are at jeopardy, and they will be prosecuted under Sarbanes-Oxley, what we call SOX. See all the signatures? They have to not just sign it. They have to sign it over and over, and different people sign it. That tells you that this is the real deal. If you're looking for original source material, go here and use it. And then, like I said, look at some very reputable analysts, not these idiots that are on Financial News Network and all that. Look at some of the heavies who are doing the analysis for Hoover's, for Standard & Poor's, and all that kind of stuff. They'll be more direct, and they'll say, well, this is what they said here. This is kind of what this means as far as I can see. But also use your own judgment. You're smart people, or sort of. Yeah, you are. You're really smart. Kind of. Okay, now. Let's get down to here, the 10K. And as I had told you before, you can download all of their financial information in an Excel spreadsheet. We have all public companies have to provide it for anyone to download it, the whole nine yards. Now, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to delete it after I've done it. But I want to point out to you. Come on. Really? Do I need a hand crank? Dum, 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 dum. Well, maybe I should go out and order a pizza or something. Seriously? Is there a foot pedal? Let's try that again. Okay. Ah! Okay, now, warning to you. This will have so many tabs, it's ridiculous. Look, here's a tab, here's a tab, here's a tab, and another one comes, and another one comes, and another one bites the dust. There you go. Look at this. Really? What I usually do, there are only some of these that are for a particular purpose, what I would probably do is I would just go through and I would delete a whole pile of these. Holding down the control key. Unless you needed it for something. And then what I do is I just delete. Yes? I might have to do a couple of rounds of it. But what that'll do is that'll get rid of the ones. There are so many that, okay, here's their property in other countries. Here's their debt. Here's a breakdown of their debt obligations. A lot of things that you might not need. But you get rid of those, and then you've got your data is right there. You can make pretty charts and stuff like that. Don't save. Now, let me get to your financial statements. Here's the warning, and I think I had already told you this before. Companies used to have to use the same names for the same things. In other words, one company, if it was an income statement, and even within a financial statement, you use the same terms. At least most companies did. Now it can be all over the board. Okay, consolidated statement of operations. I hope that is the income statement. Yes, it is. That's the income statement. Thank goodness. Now, I'm looking for something called balance sheet. Do you see balance sheet? I don't. So what I'd probably do is next look for something that said position. Nope. That's not the one. Ah, it's the one above it. There. Now, these documents will give you 3 years of income statements and 2 years of balance sheets. You can actually go into the 10K and get more years if you need it. Okay? So, let me get this a bigger screen. I know you folks in the back are probably having a more difficult time seeing that. Okay, there you go. Now, this is where we get into some technical analysis. First things first, I'm going to mute this for just a moment here, because I want to give you a real life example of one of these things. I'm going to pull something out here. I want to do something here to show you this in a real context. Okay. This one will do. Okay, now, we're going to look at the income statement. The income statement starts with sales. Of course, I'm not going to trifle with you. I know you've seen this in accounting. We have different reasons for using this, and we have to do a lot of work. For example, see down here, this thing called depreciation. There's no such thing in reality. You don't write a check to depreciation every year. In my work, for example, I put down $5,000. That blew my cash flow, $5,000. But as far as the financial statements go, all I could do was recognize a piece of that year after year after year. So it didn't really reflect the actual damage that that expense had done to me. I'll get back to you and give you an example of my work. Okay, and you'll see, and I'll talk about something here. You can see that the sales were $69,495 for the last fiscal. Now, the cost of sales is direct. Yes. Oh, I better turn it on. Sorry. Yeah, okay, fine. Seriously? Okay. So, you see that the sales were $69,495. Think of this as wholesale. These are costs at the cost of sales that are directly attachable to product. So think of this as like wholesale. If you look at this, and by the way, they're using a very bad term here. This is actually should be called gross profit or gross income. Gross margin is when you take this number, 26,623, divided by 69,495. So in this case, let me shorten that up. I would say 26,623 divided by 69,495. A little less than 30 cents of every dollar that went into the cash register survived wholesale cost. Now, you can't say that's good or bad. You have to look at it in the context of the industry, and you also have to look at it in terms of stability. Let me do 1 year back on this. This is called gross margin. It's one of the profitability ratios. And by the way, later tonight, I'm going to put up a financial ratios formula sheet on ReggieNet just for your use. You might want to have it laminated and put it on your refrigerator. I don't know. But let's do this for the previous year. Now remember that 29.68 cents. Now let's do it 1 year earlier, 21,788 divided by 73,785. Let's try that again. Twenty-nine point five three percent. So you see the gross profit has stayed stable. The gross margin, I should say. The gross margin is staying stable. Now, that makes me happy. If the gross margin is falling, that bothers me a lot. But also, if the gross margin is rising, that disturbs me too. Because there are too many companies that I can give you case studies where they started cheapening their product by buying cheaper inputs. And what came out? Bad stuff. A great example right now is in the TV industry. LG and Samsung have become notorious for reducing their wholesale costs by buying these ridiculously cheap components. And sure enough, their TVs are going black. You type in LG, black screen, Samsung, black screen. They always seem to die a little bit after the warranty has expired in a year. They're destroying their reputations by increasing their gross margins. The same is true of Nikon. It has pretty much ruined decades of great reputation by making cheap, defective cameras in Thailand. And it's just disgusting the way these companies do. And of course, Nikon, oh, we are Nikon. Yeah, well, Canon gives real good products, and they are a lot better than yours, and their service doesn't lie to us about why the defect is there. No, it wasn't we did this. It was your bad product. So you be careful if you get too excited about a gross margin that is increasing, especially if it's increasing too fast. That could mean this company is cutting corners to cut costs. Okay, now, but at the same time, you've got to remember that the cost of sales is just what you can directly tab to that product. But there are other costs that you can't. Like in my work, in my other life. Okay, I've got the print of fine art that I've created. And then that's not going to sell very much. I have to put that in a frame. Museum glass, dry mount backing, mats, the hanging assembly. And then it's ready for sale. Okay, I might have, and I'll just show you very quickly, this work right here, just $300 just to get that thing up on a display for an exhibit. $300 right there. But then there are all the soft costs, the cost of the displays, the cost of the fees to get into the art shows, the cost of the gas driving around, the cost of the camera equipment, the cost of the software. All of those can't be pegged. Those are down here. But you remember that, $300 just to get the thing on the wall, and then that doesn't include the light bills, the postage and handling, the brick and mortar, the setups, the galleries, and all that kind of stuff. It is a lot down here. And look what happens. Selling. There's that depreciation, which really doesn't mean much. But now I want to point out here, every company seems to use a different term nowadays. For this line, you take the gross margin minus the soft costs, and you get to a line which is called either operating income or earnings before interest and taxes. Every company seems to have its own name for it these days, but the traditional standard names, it's either called operating income or earnings before interest and taxes. Op Inc. or EBIT. Op Inc. or EBIT. But I mean, it just drives me crazy. And I have students say, well, I'm looking at these financial statements. I don't see any of those names you gave us. That's because everyone's got his own creativity these days. All right. Now, let me show you something here. A ratio. Another ratio. This is called a debt ratio. I'm going to take the earnings before interest and taxes and divide it by the interest expense. So I'm going to take 49.69 divided by 1,004. This is called times interest earned. Times interest earned. It is how many times over the money that is available for paying your interest expense can pay that interest expense. In this case, Target has a times interest earned of just a little under 5 times. And it's not a percentage, it's a time symbol. 5 times over, Target can pay its interest expense with the money it has available to do so. Now, I'm going to go here and I'm going to try to ask. Ratios are difficult because, first of all, any ratio, you have to look at it in the context of the trend in the ratio within the company and also with the industry itself. But here's something that's important. There's a no-no zone for times interest earned. The no-no zone is you do not want to see this number ever below 1.0. Now, the tough part is where I ask you, why do I never want to see the times interest earned below 1.0? Any guess? Got someone saving you. Go ahead. You cannot pay the current interest payment. And can you, sir, tell me why that would be a bad thing? And what would the debt holders do?
Take assets.
They would hang you. They would, that would be the end. You know, you could go for protection and bankruptcy, but pretty much that's the end of it. Game over. You're done. Go home. The dinner got burned. Yeah, below one, that's a no-no. That is the end of it. That you don't want to see that. That's the dead zone. Above one, here's the problem. You don't really like that number to be too close to one, too close. You really don't want that. And there's a reason. The reason you don't want it very close to one, you have a choice of buying a condo, madam. And the condo is a good price, okay? You can obviously pay for it. But this condo, and then there's another condo, but this condo is in the neighborhood, just a couple of streets down, is Lucifer. He lives there. with his family. Now, you don't have to. You could live up higher on the hill where you don't have Lucifer doing those Lucifer parties. No, he doesn't hurt you, but you live awfully close to him. So, you know, you get some embers on your property every now and then. A tormented soul runs by. I don't know where I get this. I mean, it's an illness. Okay, which do you choose? Live by Lucifer or live up on the hill? Yes. You see, you don't want to have a times interest earned too close to 1.0. Because below 1.0, that's Lucifer's backyard barbecue pit. Okay? So here's the deal. You want to avoid it. Keep higher than 1. I even get a little bit fussy at 3, 2. I mean, when I see 1.5, my back leg starts to hike up and thump, thump, thump. Oh, God. However, you don't want it too far above 1 either. I see a times interest earned of 25. I am really bothered by that. I don't like that. Because what that tells me is that the company is not using debt. And debt leverages capital, that is equity. I will show you that. It's called gains to leverage. It's risky, the more you borrow, but the way you create wealth aggressively in a company is through the use of OPM. Madam, do you know what OPM is? No, it's not in your notes yet. Got a guess? Ma'am, do you? OPM? Huh? Anything?
Operating margin.
Oh, not even close. That was good, though. You're good. He's good. Give him a cookie anyway. Okay. Madam, OPM? Nothing? You got anything, sir? Other people's money. That's not a joke. You leverage equity by using other people's money. If you have a choice between using your own money, if I have to use my money to make myself a great living or use your money to make myself a great living, I'm going to use your money, Ace, okay? And if things go south, well, I just default and I walk away and do my next deal. And I keep doing that my whole life, and they think I'm a freaking genius, and they even give me a reality TV show. Seriously, that's how it's done. You just pay yourself, I just pay myself a massive salary. Well, you saw, did you see that? He got all excited about making money and his pen fired. Dude, you need to not wear a tie to class. Okay. Where the heck was I? Okay. No, I'm not being facetious here. And I will show you how gains to leverage works. I will actually show you how debt actually magnifies return on equity. Debt magnifies return on equity. Now, I want to show you here, just very quickly, what I mean by return on equity and return on assets. Now, there are a lot of ratios, but one that I do want to show you right here is one where you take net income and divide it by total assets. So in this case, I closed that window. Net income divided by total assets, in this case, would be 2737, 2737 divided, and then you go back over here to your position. Total assets, 37,431, 37,431. So in other words, the assets, the whole shebang of the company's assets, considered as an investment, returned about 7.31% last year. But the other one is how much did the equity, the owner's part, return? So I'd go back to the income statement, and I would take that 27, 37, and I would divide it by the book value of the stockholders' equity, which is down here, total shareholders' investment. 10,953 divided by 10,953. Whoa, almost a 25% return on equity. That's decent. That's nice. So target, it might be, that might be a little weak on the return to all of the assets, but that return on equity is nice. So your investment as a shareholder, as an owner, is hauling 25% in this company right now. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.